The FBI says it's opened more than 160 criminal cases related to the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol last week by a mob of pro-Trump extremists, which included white supremacists, QAnon conspiracy theorists, and others. A lot of questions remain about how the security breach was able to happen, despite FBI officials saying on Friday they had no intelligence suggesting the president's rally could turn violent. The Washington Post reported that the Bureau's Norfolk office had alerted its D.C. branch about specific threats made in online forums. The New York Police Department also reportedly warned the Capitol Police Force about threats of violence before last Wednesday. Our next guest says that given the warnings last week and well before that, the attack shouldn't have come as a surprise and that right-wing extremism is a significant concern for the future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how law enforcement agencies watch for and respond to threats of domestic terrorism? Do you think the events at the Capitol qualify as that? Are you worried about far-right extremism and the risk of more violence in the near and midterm future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Clint Watts is a distinguished research fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute and a former FBI counterterrorism analyst. He's the author of Messing with the Enemy, Surviving in a Social Media World of Hackers, Terrorists, Russians, and Fake News. Clint, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Clint, I was following your Twitter feed on the events of last Wednesday. Shocking they were, but you say not really surprising. Why not?
All the way back to, I would say, August timeframe. I have a couple research teams that I work with, and it was very clear that the biggest danger was going to be mobilizations in and around the election, particularly on election day to polling places, if it was thought to be contentious and close. And we did see a little bit of that. One thing that held it up is the election was so close, no one knew where to mobilize to. And we were watching for the president and others who were claiming that the election was rigged or voter fraud. We were watching to see if they would point to anywhere. And Philadelphia was really one of the first places, you know, on his Twitter feed. And you saw a couple extremists show up there and they were arrested. But it was mostly good news, but you could see it building. And so I think most of President Trump's supporters that believe the election fraud claims were still waiting, and January 6th became their last hope. That was, it was resolving itself. As soon as that happens, that's the transfer of power, and it's over. And so it was clear probably 2 weeks before that this big mobilization was going to happen. They were putting out maps across a variety of extremist channels. QAnon sort of fan clubs were posting that people should travel to DC for the Stop the Steal. It was very organized. There was a large rally the day before, and it was clear from those discussions that some people had violent intentions. So if you were watching it, there should have been no way you were surprised. And I think that's why we're finding out about law enforcement giving warnings in this space.
When we look at the people in the Capitol, I mean, early on, it looked like, okay, some protesters who happened to be there wandered in when they found an opening. But as we saw it more and more, it looked more violent and more organized. Can you talk about the composition from known right-wing extremist groups to, you know, protesters who followed the surge? What did we see from the people who ended up in the Capitol that day?
I think what you saw was the confluence of a lot of different factors. Look, you have people that are just President Trump supporters, right? And they came out there because he called them to a rally and he was there. He gave a speech. But intermixed in there, in terms of any extremist group, you're always going to have people or any ideology that is arguing with the outcome of the election, you're going to have extremists that are mobilizing to violence enmeshed in them. And that's true of any large gathering, pretty much, or protest. And we saw that through the summer. You'll have some criminal elements, but you're also going to have your most ardent extremists who think this is their last chance. And for that, that was anti-government groups. That was some race-based extremist groups. And so you see them flow into the Capitol, and they're the leaders of it. And then what happens in behind is they have a mixed gathering of people that are flowing in. I think what is remarkable is the weapons. It's the Molotov cocktails, the explosive devices, people showing up with zip ties, people hunting for specific congressmen. I do wonder, had they gotten a hold of certain congressmen, what might have happened? Looking at the Michigan militia just months before, Wolverine militia, a variant of it essentially, that was planning to kidnap Governor Whitman. This talk has been out there, and you're seeing people plotting and planning. So I think we got lucky in the sense that while it was awful and devastating, it could have led to a congressman or a standoff or someone being murdered on the Senate floor.
You mentioned this was a last gasp effort to overturn the election result. Is it going to be the last gasp effort of the groups, the online communities that got us here?
Yeah, I think in the last couple of days, the intense law enforcement and military presence in Washington, D.C. is going to deter people from going to the nation's capital. I think in the sorry about that, it cut out for a second.
That's
I think
okay.
In many of the extremist channels, you're seeing them start to dissuade their supporters. The president, I believe, did issue a memo today, you know, from the White House saying that people shouldn't mobilize. And so that has a downturn effect. My concern is that on the fringes of these groups, there are ones and twos are mobilizing still and see the final days now until the inauguration is their last chance and that there's no turning back. So it becomes a question of if not now, when, right? Like, this is it. And so luckily the FBI, I'm sure, is running down a lot of this. State and locals are doing a great deal of this. My final concern is just the overlap or tacit support of law enforcement or military is a vulnerability, you know, for these extremist groups if they have members with cross membership. But I do feel like things will not be what we saw on January 6th.
Talking to Clint Watts from the Foreign Policy Research Institute, former FBI counterterrorism analyst, looking at right-wing extremism and its threats. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Eli is with us in La Crosse. Eli, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, I have a question for your guest. So obviously, right-wing extremism is a problem, and we've seen that problem throughout history. But with the last year passing and all the protests and stuff and even storming up federal buildings in Washington, I was just wondering why we didn't see the same mobilization afterwards of FBI and police units to track down those who were storming federal buildings then on, you know, from a radical left agenda than those who now stormed federal buildings in Washington last week.
Eli, thanks for the call. Clint, what do you think?
I'm not sure I entirely understand the numbers or statistics behind it. I mean, there were undercover groups in Portland, Oregon, arresting people off the streets preemptively, and I think after events throughout the summer. In terms of the mobilization and defense of the Capitol, there's a difference because the Capitol is ultimately commanded by the president, whereas in the states, the National Guard is commanded or mobilized by the governor. And so oftentimes the mobilizations you saw were dependent on state and local law enforcement and the governor in each state. So the response is somewhat predicated on whoever the chief executive is in charge of the forces around it. I think in the case of January 6th, part of the reason why we didn't see the response we should have and in a timely fashion is because there was such concern amongst people in the Department of Defense for months that the military was going to be pulled into the electoral process. And due to optics, they were trying as hard as they could to stay out of it. They did not want to see armed troops essentially going into the nation's capital for that rally or on that day with what was going on to the Capitol. Obviously, that's going to change now as a defensive posture. But I think the idea was that there had been calls amongst the conspiracy groups that the president should declare martial law and call in the military. And I think that made the military resistant to immediately mobilize and help out in and around D.C. on that day last week.
Thanks for the call, Eli. We'll go to Eric now in Madison. Eric, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What I find disturbing is the right-wing movement among our law enforcement officers. And you could see that in D.C. You can see it with Democrat governors and Matt.
We lost you there, Eric, but we get the gist. Worried about white supremacy and law enforcement. You'd mentioned that briefly, Clint. Can you talk about that concern a little more? You also mentioned the military. We have this statement from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the heads of all the military arms, saying this was sedition. Don't do this. What do you make of that risk that Eric raises?
Yeah, I'll start with the second part first, which is it was very clear there were former and even current military members that were at the Capitol, which is very disturbing. And, you know, in certain groups, the Proud Boys, for example, some of them that were storming in there, they were wearing their military patches, you know, and insignia and things like that from when they had served. So that is an issue because it brings into question if we have several hundred current and recently former military people who are showing up there, how is that spread out into the active duty force? So I guarantee the Department of Defense is doing a hard look at that today and in the coming months will be. Separately, in the law enforcement space, white supremacists, it has not been, I think, as pervasive as the militia groups. I think that's where the real concern is. You've seen militia groups where there's crossover or dueling membership between the militia group and law enforcement. And I think that's where things get very concerning. And a lot of the militia groups are founded, formed, staffed by former military people. So when you get that confluence, it starts to bring into question, would there be a challenge of allegiance to the state or to the group or to a cause or an ideology? I think that's what we need to be worried about, particularly in certain jurisdictions that are overwhelmingly for President Trump and believe in his election fraud claims.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Clint Watts right now, research fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, former FBI counterterrorism analyst, looking at warning signs that led up to last week's attack on the Capitol and the threat of domestic extremism in the future. You could join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Clint Watts, former FBI counterterrorism analyst, now research fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, about domestic terrorism. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions about the dangers of extremism here in the United States. Clint, before we go back to our callers, I wanted to ask you about how to police this sort of thing. I think when we think of a terrorist group, we think of people who meet up in a cave, in a basement, in a remote woods somewhere or something like that. We have people meeting up on the internet and maybe nine people who say extremist things will never do anything violent in their life. But what about that 10th one? How do you get a handle on that?
Yeah, so I think the problem is scale right now. There's just way too many threats for the manpower that's out there and way too many conflicting priorities. So just think of I'll use the FBI as an example, but you could include state and local law enforcement. Think of the pattern they've gone through over the last 2 years, being derided by the president over an investigation that occurred before the 2016 election. You know, that sort of discrediting, fighting that internally, doing election defense, whether you're at DHS or the FBI, trying to protect those systems against foreign influence while simultaneously watching the George Floyd protest and having to respond to that. You had the Nashville bombing on Christmas Day, and now you have the Capitol Hill fiasco last week. That's an overwhelming amount of leads, and it means that the extremism situation has grown to such an extent in the United States that it can't adequately be tracked because we would have known that it was coming. We've gotten to that point in international terrorism. If you rewind from 2001 all the way through to today, we've gotten much better with international terrorism. Rarely does it sneak up on us. You know, it's a lone wolf or someone who's really hidden their tracks. And the FBI is still very good at preempting that stuff. We don't have that kind of a picture on the domestic space. Part of it is because our laws are different. But the other part of it is also the acceleration of it has been so tremendous over the last 3 to 4 years. White supremacists, anti-government, accelerationists, which is a more extreme fringe of the white supremacist movement, but also just trying to accelerate a second civil war or bring about conflict for societal change. Those sorts of things have grown so quickly, and it's due to the interconnectivity of the internet and social media. and then provoking each other to essentially go ahead and conduct these attacks. And so that inspirational contagion becomes a problem. To fix this over time is going to be a difficult task for several different reasons. One, the pandemic is all-consuming, you know, to the country at this point. Closures, you know, mobilizing resources, we're just overrun. Second, it's we have to build unity in the country around common purpose. As long as we have a large chunk of the citizenry that thinks that the election was fraudulent or the outcome was rigged, we will have a problem bringing people together. That is, you know, not good. It's tough to defend all Americans in that case. And I think this is where the politicization of the military and the law enforcement over the last several years by the president really comes to roost. And that has degraded institutions that are designed to protect Americans. And in the past, it didn't matter who it was, Republican or Democrat. They always tried to do the right thing and bring people together. And I'm hoping we can guide that, but I think it'll be a long repair. It won't happen instantly.
Let's go back to our callers now. JT is with us in Madison. JT, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What you want to bring up?
Yeah, I had a question. Actually, I had a comment and a question. My comment is, I believe that this terrorist act on the state capitol is treason, and that it should be a felony charge. I don't know if it's a felony to break into the state capitol, but I believe that these people should be charged with a felony and lose their right to vote and lose their gun privileges because they're irrational thinkers. And also my question is, could foreign influences be using the social media platform to be spreading propaganda and false conspiracy theories that people are grabbing hold of? Those are my two questions. Thanks for taking my call.
JT, thanks for the call. He's referring to the U.S. Capitol there. But Clint, to his question, are foreign actors helping to exacerbate these conspiracy theories that help drive these things?
Yes, in two ways. For years now, specific foreign meddlers, Russia number one, but Iran as well, have been infiltrating different groups in the United States and agitating and provoking them through disinformation and conspiracies. And that polarization primes domestic groups then to fight with each other. There is foreign influence and nudging in the U.S. audience base right now on these extremist groups. You've already seen some of the foreign actors that we watch on social media start to point out where to go to, as many of these extremist groups have been deplatformed, they're pointing where to go to reconnect with your group on different platforms. And they're pumping content in there. You might also remember just a few weeks ago to a few months ago, there was a fake Proud Boys text message that was being shot around with respect to certain people showing up at polling places. It was a violent threat, but it was attributed to Iran. It was not American made. So they see weakness in our country, and they're trying to use that weakness to exploit and divide us.
I've heard some experts say, yes, Russia is exacerbating divisions. Others are. But we've gotten pretty good at it ourselves. Even without that foreign help, we'd have a lot of these problems. Is there something to that?
Yeah. 4 years ago, the Russians were hidden. People didn't realize they were interacting with, you know, foreign content. That is not the case in 2020. The disinformation, the conspiracies were American made. Headed into 2020. They were even touted by elected officials. Sure, the Russians amplified it. The Iranians will amplify it at times, or even the Chinese. But it's a drop in an ocean of conspiracy theories at this point. And so I think from the foreign perspective going into Election Day, the question, not only were they delighted to see us tear ourselves apart and fight amongst ourselves, but the question was, you know, what could Russia or Iran or China do to America that America wasn't already doing to itself?
In our last couple of minutes, the FBI recently has identified right-wing extremism as a major threat. There have been accusations that the Trump administration dialed down efforts against right-wing extremism. How well are we balanced in our efforts to prevent right-wing extremism versus the other potential sources of violence?
Yeah, so I think the FBI, up until this, you know, most recent point, and I think they probably just got overwhelmed, was doing a really good job of preemptively moving to, take out certain key individuals in these movements. After the Walmart shooting in El Paso, you saw them do a number of domestic arrests around these groups. And in the lead up to Election Day, it looked like they preemptively arrested a lot of people, what was known as kind of the Boogaloo movement. And that had a disruptive effect that was, I would imagine, very helpful at securing the polling places. The problem is capacity. The problem is resources. We just have not gotten there. And I also think there's sensitivity around the free speech question. Much of what is being said is being claimed to be political speech. But without wading too much into the campaigns, I mean, Rudy Giuliani was at the rally the day before, and he talked about it's time to move to essentially out of law and into combat. That is incitement to terrorism that, had it come out of the mouth of a Al-Qaeda cleric 10, 12 years before, when I was working on extremism, would have led to almost an immediate opening of an FBI case. You know, that is incitement. That's what we worried about with Al-Qaeda ideologues for a decade.
We'll leave it there for now. Clint, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Clint Watts is a research fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute and a former FBI counterterrorism analyst. He's the author of the book Messing with the Enemy, Surviving in a Social Media World of Hackers, Terrorists, Russians, and Fake News. He joined us for a look at the threat of right-wing extremism after last week's attack on the U.S. Capitol building.